We are back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Hour number three. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick with you. Chase will be on this afternoon with Floyd Reese. It'll be Chase and the GM coming up at 2 o'clock. We say hello to Tim Hasselbeck, who we haven't talked to in a couple of weeks from ESPN. Tim, how you doing?
I'm great, Darren. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, we had Jackie McMullen on in the first hour. Do you have any have you had much dealings with Jackie over the years?
Yeah, definitely, very familiar with her growing up in Boston. Obviously, she's
yep.
Was it the Boston Globe that she wrote
yes.
for a really long time?
Yes.
Certainly, and then obviously she's been on ESPN for quite a bit as well.
It was pretty interesting to hear her talk about the cast or the group at the Boston Globe covering sports. It was the who's who. I mean, it was pretty impressive
to
see
who was. It was.
So you was covering the Boston sports scene. So how have you been?
So I've been good. I'm trying to think. I wonder what my conflicts were the last couple of weeks. I've had I've just probably been on SportsCenter and NFL Live a little bit more. I feel like that's been kind of gotten into my schedule a little bit. But a lot of the same. And it's interesting. There's obviously everyone here in Nashville knows like things are starting to open back up a little bit more, especially in Davidson County, in comparison to how they were. And my reaction, I think is, I hit that point like a lot of people that were like, okay, like it's time to get back to work a little bit here, right? Like we seem to be doing okay. The hospitals aren't overwhelmed. Like, hey, let's get back to work. And as soon as I started to have that feeling and being encouraged, like, yeah, we're going to have college football this year and feel good about, the NFL keeping their schedule and all of that stuff, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, shoot, look at the Clemson football team, and oh, no, look at Kansas State. And, I think I'm a little bit nervous about it now, to be honest.
I think for good reason. We were kind of discussing that earlier in the show. I mean, football's not going to have a bubble. The NBA is going to have their bubble, their own little world in Orlando. The NHL is going to have two bubbles somewhere. We don't know yet. And football doesn't have a bubble. So how will that play out as they are just...
And listen, even if you have a bubble, what happens if the bubble gets contaminated? Like, I know some people who... live and work in New York City. And so one of the things they did was they left town and, went basically home in Ohio. And so, they basically spent from March till about now, in Ohio thinking, hey, listen, we're going to get out of this, New York City hotspot and let's go to Ohio where there aren't any in this, county, there aren't any cases really, and let's go hang out there. And everything's going great. Well, 3 months later, all of a sudden it's like, oh, shoot, someone has it. And everyone here who's been here escaping it, now they've been exposed to that person. So it's almost like that mentality of like, hey, okay, hey, we're in this bubble. We're going to be away from this hotspot. But what happens when the bubble gets contaminated?
Yeah.
Now everyone that thought they were safe is no longer safe.
And what do you do about, I don't know, have they put out a definitive plan of if a team gets hit harder with positive tests than others in the middle of a season, like how roster-wise they're going to handle that?
Yeah, I don't know how you do it in the NFL. Obviously there's a non-football injury list, but like what happens if you are I'll give you an example. I have a cousin who is a Division I. He's a freshman quarterback at Boston College. And so he reported to camp, I believe it was yesterday or the day before. He's from Cincinnati. And so, he's going to go in, and basically when he gets in, they're quarantining him in the dorm room and all the other football players that reported, I think, for 8 days. So you know, which is good, smart. It's a good idea, and hopefully, you know, it ends up being a success, and, you know, they don't have a widespread thing like some of these other schools have had. But what happens if, you know, 2 weeks before, not even, you know, a week before the first game, they have 23 players test positive?
Right.
Well, now what do you do? Because not just those 23 guys, it's the other infected guys, the other guys that were exposed. And so if you have to quarantine them for a week, like what do you do? So I my thing with this is I feel like in the NFL, you know, you have adults that have signed a contract that, you know, can make a decision where they're assessing risk. And I understand that many players themselves aren't necessarily at high risk. Now, for college students, again, many of them aren't at high risk. But, like, who's their advocate? Like, who's their, like, who's telling them it's okay for them to play or it's not okay for them to play? I'm really uncomfortable with that, just speaking candidly about it. I'm not sure about it. And, you know, then the other aspect of it is, you know, in terms of these, you know, generally healthy young players, you know, not being at a high risk from a standpoint of it being fatal, but, like, they can't just be concerned about themselves either, right? Like, you know, are they around family members that are at high risk? Do they have roommates that are high risk? Like, there's just so many factors that is starting to make me feel uncomfortable about it.
How would you feel if your kids were a little bit older and they were in college as Division I athletes? I wonder how the families feel about this.
Well, I can tell you a couple different ways. I mean, I feel sick about it for my kids playing youth sports. You know, we've talked a little bit about my daughter. My daughter's going to be a freshman. She really likes lacrosse. You know, she'll probably be a college lacrosse player, and she's missing out on a lot. You know, I have a son who's 12, and, you know, 12 years old, when you play on that 200-foot fence, like, you know, that's the year you start jacking home runs, you know?
That's right.
It's like, you know,
that's
to miss
year.
Out on that stuff, right? That's a fun year, you know? And so, you know, fortunately, we're going to get some of that stuff in, but, like, yeah, you're missing out on so much of it. I mean, you already have, and then, look, you guys know I've coached 5th and 6th grade football the last couple of years. I can't tell you. I mean, there's a lot of kids who need help buckling their chin strap and putting their mouth guard in. You know, like, part of me, I'm like, really? Are we, like, I don't know. I don't know if we're doing that. So, and then my niece, you know, my brother Matthew, who obviously you guys know, he has a daughter who is scholarship lacrosse player, going to be a scholarship lacrosse player at BC. And, you know, when she committed there, you know, she committed there thinking some girls were going to have graduated, right? Well, now there's 44 girls on the lacrosse team because of all the girls that were seniors that get that extra year of eligibility back.
Oh.
So, I mean, I just think that there's a, you know, there's also a ripple effect to this that, you know, you wonder, you know, how it works out. And then, by the way, because of that, and I don't think it's just because of that, but because of that, you know, if some of these athletic departments that, you know, have found windows into cutting other sports. I mean, just look at what's happened. I think it was Furman, you know, cut baseball and men's lacrosse, and App State cut a bunch of, you know, men's sports. So, yeah, I mean, this is, in so many ways, this is really disheartening.
Boy. It is. There's so many layers to it, no question. Tim Hasselbeck is with it. So, Tim, Darren and I have sort of talked about our experiences with our kids and had, you know, the return to play. We're making those decisions, you know, as we go here. We've tried to seek out a lot of opinions. And so you just touched on it a little bit with your kids. So how did you try to balance, you know, the kids wanting to get out there, needing activity, but also trying to do it safely?
Yeah, so, you know, we basically have kind of followed the guidelines of what, you know, our area has, you know, deemed as okay. So, like, we've played in the baseball tournament in Smyrna. We've played in the baseball tournament in Hendersonville. You know, we had stuff that was scheduled to be played in Davidson County, and didn't play, and you know that stuff got canceled. You know, as for my daughter, you know, a similar thing. Basically, every lacrosse camp around the country that she was scheduled to go to, that stuff's been canceled, and there's some stuff that is still on the schedule. And if it goes on, then we'll go. You know, Elizabeth and I were kind of talking about it last night, where you know, if a family gets you know the virus, I think the natural reaction probably will be, man, could we have been more careful? Like, are there things that we could have done a better job of? And, you know, I think the thing is if you are being careful, if you're doing things that you should be doing, where wearing a mask and you should be wearing a mask, if you're washing your hands as frequently as you can possibly, you know, do it, and if you're doing that, I do think there's elements of, like, it's not healthy to not be participating in life. Like for social right. development of kids, for being on a team. I think the same thing goes for adults. And so unfortunately, I just think we're at that stage.
Yeah, it is a lot to think about. Let's ask a couple of football questions here.
What have you guys done? Have you guys opted out of participating in things that you could have?
We just did our first tournament last weekend. Not this past weekend, but the weekend before.
Yeah, we've been playing. I've actually done a couple of travel tournaments, which I was actually surprised were going to happen as quickly as they happened. But we talked to a lot of people, just like you said, Tim. We balanced all that stuff, and so far, so good. And you know, knock on wood. You know, sometimes you don't know for another couple of weeks if anybody picks up anything. But you know, hopefully it'll play out okay.
Well, just to kind of let you know about what you're talking about, they did. This one was just happened to be at Lee Victory Park in Smyrna too. This tournament, and there's four fields. Is that where you played when you said you?
Is that the one with the AstroTurf? That's really awesome.
Oh, you played at Cedarstone? You played at the new ones? The four?
Place,
oh, those are
that place. Is
they just opened. Like it literally just. You must have been the first ones on that field. Tell me how.
I think it was the second weekend of it, and. It's pretty awesome, though.
Yeah, it is. It is four all turf fields. Did they have all four open, or did they only use half?
They used half.
Okay, so that's what we dealt with. So they only use half of the four. So they only had two fields. So they had to limit, some of the age groups, and we were limited to 18 teams, and we just squeaked in. It was 18, and it was sold out in our age group of 8U, I mean, quick. And they couldn't do any more because, you know, you only have so much time to work in all of this. And so we just got in. But that just goes to show you, to your question, 18 teams. They only would take 18 teams, and it was sold out in a blink of an eye.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do think that like there's an element of this that, and you know, you try not to be callous, you know, about it because there are real risks. Look, I've told you before, I have a cousin who's in my wedding, really, you know, close friend of mine, and he was in ICU because he really didn't have any underlying issues. So, you know, it is something you have to take seriously. You know, at the same time, like I think that there's an element of, like, is it healthy to just sit in your house, not participate in life, especially at some of these ages that are pretty developmental ages?
Good point. Let's mix in a football question here. Tim, you've talked a lot about how much you've wondered whether Ben Roethlisberger can make it back and be the same that he's been. It's an interesting article, Brooke Pryor on ESPN, really got him to open up about some of the issues he's been dealing with off the field that go beyond just recovering from injuries that we've all seen on the field.
Yeah, I saw it and talked about it on SportsCenter last night. I guess I kind of just take the health aspect of it first, in that, you know, Kevin Colbert at the combine, the Steelers GM, was adamant about, like, hey, he may be better. He may be better. Like a year of not taking a bunch of other hits and things like that. And so, kind of surprised me because I was thinking in many respects, like, he might be done, but seems like his recovery from this elbow surgery has gone really well. And, you know, as you go back to 2018, that's the best statistical year he's ever had. Then I think you kind of, so just that physical part with his elbow and everything like that. Then you think about, you know, what he's talking about. I guess he spoke, you know, it was kind of a church or a Christian men's group that he did, you know, virtually, and talked about basically addictions that he had been dealing with, you know, throughout his career. And you're right, he really did open up. And, you know, I think that, you know, to have been at a place where he is talking the way he's talking about, you know, addictions that he's kind of suffered with throughout his career, and compare that to where he was maybe early in his career, where, quite honestly, I mean, there was some really dicey stuff where, you know, he's been accused of some crimes that really could have right. ended up, you know, kicking him out of the league. And so, yeah, I think my reaction to it is you really hope that Ben just personally is in a much better place than he was in, you know, earlier on in his career. So even though he was enjoying all his professional success, obviously, you know, there was elements of his life that were spinning completely out of control. And look, if he has kind of his off the field life in a much better place and he's as healthy as he was, I think the Steelers could be a Super Bowl contending team. I mean, I think they could be that good. They were 8-8 last year with kind of disaster play at the quarterback position. So
it was about as low a level as you could get.
Yeah, I mean, think of it was Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph and all kinds of drama there and in and out of, you know, different guys in the lineup. Now think if you can have like Pro Bowl caliber play at the quarterback position. I mean, is that two more wins? Is it three more wins? Is it four more wins? Like, I think they're a Super Bowl contending team if that happens.
Yeah, and that affects the Titans for sure. And the last one for me, Tim, the rankings came out, you know, this is what we do in the summer, right, especially this summer. You rank everything, right, whatever it is. But they put out, I think through Pro Football Focus, they rank the rosters. And the Titans are number 8 in that. Is that about right for you? Is that in the ballpark or where you would have had them?
Yeah, I hadn't seen it, and obviously, you know, Wood probably needs to take some time to kind of look at everything, but it kind of makes sense to me. I mean, I think that, you know, I think a lot of people would feel like, you know, a quarterback is a top 10 quarterback, so that's going to be important. I think when you look at, you know, guys that are playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, they certainly have, you know, enough of those, you know, guys that kind of stick out a little bit in terms of being difference makers. You know, I think when you look at kind of how the receiver position, you know, evolved last year and how you feel like he was a really bright young star at the position and, you know, a really talented running back and talented offensive lineman. I mean, I think that you can see why, you know, people look at him and be like, yeah, like across the board, including everything, and not just kind of the fancy stuff of skill position players, but considering defensive tackle and considering, you know, guard and all of that stuff. I think that would be about right. I'd probably have a hard time arguing that.
Is Antonio Brown going to be on a roster this year?
You know, I wouldn't have said yes, but I – put it this way, if we're playing football, it just seems like there's too many teams that are kind of, sort of, you know, maybe having it out there that they might have some interest to kind of see what the reaction is. And, you know, there probably still has to be some league stuff that happens to figure out what his status is. But it wouldn't surprise me to see him play. And I also keep getting this feeling on Cam Newton. I know that we've talked about it before, that like as soon as there is like a, hey, we're starting training camp on this date, as soon as we know when football is going to start, I think things around Cam Newton are going to heat up quite a bit.
Hmm. Leave us with this, Tim. We're going to get into this with Chris Mason in the next hour, because we went down this road last week with him on the professional athlete side of things. Can you coach mental toughness, you know, mental fortitude, that mindset that you need? But we were talking about adults, and we said this week, because he's got kids just like us, and just can you teach that? And I'm experiencing this with the youth side of things, and you've got now what, a daughter and two boys that have kind of gone through the phase where I am right now. And I'm curious, and as you coach too, can you teach this at the youth level? Can you teach? I kind of feel like that's what we're missing. That's like the where we are, like the one we keep losing, like one run. You know, we're playing the best teams in one and two run heartbreak losses, and it's like we're right there, and I feel like the missing ingredient is just kind of like not having them slump, not having them get sad. Mm-hmm. My thing is don't get sad, get mad. But can you actually teach that at the youth level, that mentality?
I do think you can. I think you can. I mean, so I
did you say
like
can or can't?
My kids have – you can.
Can,
I feel
okay.
Like my kids have been on teams. Yeah, I think my kids have been on teams where there have been kids that you know, emotionally, let's just say something bad happens. They would have the ability to emotionally go in the tank, and what
yes.
that could do is just drag the rest of the group down, right? Like,
and they're talented,
they,
by the
they
way.
Are
they're good. They're good. They're good players.
Yeah, like, yeah, like, oh, for sure. And like those kids that are the thermostat for your team that can do that and can just drag the whole group down. Like, I think that they can be taught, like, hey, listen, you can't do that, because when you do that, what it does is it drags everybody else down. And then I think they also tell the other kids, like, hey, listen, when something's going bad for somebody else, like, you can help them. Like, I feel like I have definitely seen improvement. And maybe part of it comes with, you know, age. Look at a 12-year-old cries less often than an 8-year-old. You know, I mean, part of it is, you know, that it does happen, like, as they get a little bit older. But I don't think that there is any question that there is elements of mental toughness that can be kind of nurtured and taught.
Okay.
And, you know, I think...
Because the question I've had, Tim, is it just in your DNA, or can it actually be taught? You know, do they have to be equipped with it, or can it actually be, instilled in them? That's been my biggest question.
So
you
I think
say
it can
yes.
be instilled in them. I think it can be instilled in them, but I think it's easier to instill it in them for a coach to instill it in them if it's kind of being taught at home. You know, if it's not being taught at home and you're trying to teach it as a coach, I think you can still teach it as a coach, but I think it's much harder if it's not a consistent message, you know, at practice and at home. But I think like when it's at home and at practice, like I think those are the kids that really, really thrive.
Mm, good stuff. All right, good. Good deal. Thanks for weighing in on that. Good to talk to you. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you here soon.
Yeah, you do the same. Good luck in your tournaments this weekend. And
Thank you.
Hopefully you get to play that field soon, man. The field's sweet down there.
Oh, we definitely want to get over there. I want to check it out.
I think they kind of feel like they play for Vandy when they're there. Like
really?
The thing. Like,
well,
it's like I think we don't like with my kids. It's like that's the only field they know about that's all turf. You know, so it's like. Okay, it's Vandy and Smyrna. That's who does it.
Good stuff as always. Thanks for doing this.
See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck. Willie, these fields are Cedarstone. They're over by Stewart's Creek High School. I mean, they're almost like across the street. They just opened the park. I'm surprised that he's saying that they were the second one, and I didn't think there had been anything but maybe one tournament at most. They're all turf, and they are sweet. I haven't been on them. I've just stopped and looked at them from a distance, and they're impressive to see. All
nice.
Turf.
You'll start to see more the more you go. I think that's the direction it's going because obviously what it does is it makes it so much easier to upkeep the field or deal with rain.
Deal with rain,
if
that's
you,
right.
If you
yep.
have the rain and you got all these games scheduled and you get a couple hours of rain, it just really messes up
yep.
the whole tournament. Whereas a shower here and there on a turf field, as we found out with Hawkins Field, you know, it saves you tons
yep.
of time. So you're seeing more of these pop up. Our team has played about three straight weeks now on almost all turf fields, regardless of where we've been. We're going to be at Shelby Park this weekend. Now that we're in phase three, we got a tournament. So a lot of local teams playing. So in the next few days, that'll be fun to get on some natural grass. But the turf fields are here to stay, I think.
Oh,
it's not like the carpet like it was when we were
no.
growing up, right? The Astrodome and Busch Stadium in St. Louis and Veterans Stadium, some of that awful turf. I was watching yesterday a great game, a famous game, 1981. The closest the Montreal Expos ever got to the World Series. They lost the last game at home to the Dodgers. Rick Monday hit a home run in the ninth inning. Fernando Valenzuela, his rookie year, remember what a sensation he was. Mm-hmm. He pitched the entire game, pitched a great game. But the turf at Montreal's Olympic Stadium, oh my God, it was brutal. There was paper all over the field. There was seams everywhere. I'm like, how did anybody? It's a wonder Andre Dawson, what could he have been? Or Gary Carter, guys like that, great players. What could have done? What, you know, how much extra could they have played? How much better could they have played had they not had to deal with that turf every year?
Yeah, it's not 80s turf.
The wear and tear.
The stuff
my gosh,
down today, not 80s turf. As Neil O'Donnell would tell you, as he sells a lot of turf.
Oh yeah,
it's not turf of decades ago. It is really, really good stuff these days. We'll come back. We're going to expand a little bit more, and we're going to catch up with Chris Harris. He's going to join us from WSMV and learn a little bit more about this 40-man roster, these two teams playing against each other, or 40 games, these two teams playing against each other here in Nashville. We'll talk to Chris on the other side of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be talking to a couple of Chris's here on the show. Chris Mason to start the fourth and final hour. That's just around the corner in a little bit less than 30 minutes. And now we're going to speak with Chris Harris from WSMV, Channel 4, here in town on television. And we read you some of his tweets at the end of last hour. And it was interesting, Chris, seeing what Jason Stark put out there on Twitter. It certainly got our attention last night about some potential players, you know, that the MLB could use here from Nashville, and there could be some teams playing against each other. And lo and behold, you put out there that you had spoke with General Manager Adam Neuse of the Sounds, and it looks like there could be a 40-game season at First Horizon Park, which is the new name over there, and that could start as early as maybe July 23rd. And we're talking about 40 players, two teams playing against each other. Tell us more. We're really intrigued by this. When did you get wind of this?
Yeah, this morning I talked with Adam Neuse this morning because I was curious that after Jason Stark put out what he put out last night, he said actually that the Sounds were going to release all of this information on Monday, but then the news leaked out last night, and so that kind of got the ball rolling there. But yeah, it's interesting. They've been working on this plan for the last couple of months and then really got in touch with Major League Baseball. It showed some interest in working with them in the last two or three weeks. And so they've been putting this together and trying to figure out everything.
Well, it was interesting in kind of some of your follow-up tweets. You said Adam Neuse told you that the plan for games will be with or without Major League Baseball's cooperation.
Yeah, he said, you know, they're adamant about trying to put a product back out on the field. You know, since day one, when I talked to Adam this season after the shutdown, I talked to him two other times before today, and they've just been trying to figure out, you know, what can we do to put something out there, and that's it. We have a great venue. What can we do? So they've just been churning and trying to figure this out. And so, yeah, I guess this was the best possible scenario as far as baseball goes. You're trying to get something back there. And like I said, they're looking at 40 players with two teams, two managers of each team, and trying to play 40 games that start on July 23rd. But then the thread the needle situation is Nashville has to hit its phase four of, you know, reopening plan, which he says right now, according to the mayor's office, he's been in constant contact with them, trying to work with them through this plan. They're hopeful that that date's going to be July 20th. So they have a couple of days leeway before they get started. And then he says he hopes to have a 7 to 10 day window prior to the phase four beginning when they start bringing players in. So they're just kind of waiting and hoping that that we hit that phase four date so they can make this happen.
Was Adam able to get a little bit specific with you on where these players are going to come from? Is, you know, they're a Rangers affiliate. I mean, is this going to be guys in the Rangers organization heavy? Is this going to be guys from, you know, a couple guys from teams all around Major League Baseball? Is there going to be free agents, guys out there with no affiliation? Any idea the pool of players, where they're going to come from?
Didn't get into specifics with that. He said, you know, if Major League Baseball gets involved with them, then they can help funnel some players, you know, that may obviously that won't be on the major league teams or their taxi squad, but guys who have had big league experience who can be, you know, ready to go at the drop of the hat. Like, let's say if a team, you know, gets four, five, six guys who, you know, acquire a COVID-19 disease and have to go down and they need supplemental players somehow, that they can pull them right back up and fit them in. So if MLB helps them out in that route, then it could be, yeah, guys who have MLB experience or just other minor leaguers. But he says if they go it alone, it's still other minor leaguers or free agents. He's just trying to pull together a roster right now.
So it sounds to me, speaking with Chris Harris from WSMV Channel 4 here in town, it sounds to me if they were working with Major League Baseball, it would be have to be a certain type of player, right? It would have to be either a former big leaguer or a guy that has had big league experience or maybe on the cusp of becoming a big leaguer. It was at the AAA level already. Because if they do have to use players where they test positive that are currently on, or somebody gets hurt, and you're looking for a guy to be pulled up and put on your MLB roster, they'd have to be MLB ready. So that would basically eliminate rookies or guys in lower tiers of minor leagues, true?
Yeah, I mean, you make the case for that, definitely. But, you know, it's such a fluid situation that obviously everyone's going to want the best players possible for their situation. But, what you're saying definitely makes sense.
Chris Harris is with us. We're talking about potentially a couple of teams being formed to play at the Sound Stadium while baseball gets going here. So, Chris, you hit on the key point, especially from the Sound standpoint. If they can't hit Phase 4 and you can't sell tickets, can they still have the games with no fans there, or is that not of interest to the Sounds?
I don't think they would be able to do that. The Sounds are absorbing the cost of this, too. The money would be similar to what it was with these minor leaguers who were getting paid, you know, up through the month of June, what by most clubs, you know, the $400 a week thing. So that's what the Sounds would pay each of these players. And obviously they wouldn't be able to do that or wouldn't want to be able to do that if they didn't have some type of revenue coming in. So even at 25% capacity, which is what they would be limited to according to News, they'd need some way to offset those costs. So he said there'd be about a week or so leeway if they had to delay Phase 4 opening by a week. They could maybe do that, but he said the 40 games, as far as how it's going to work and be cost effective, they'd have to hit that mark with fans in the stands in order to do that.
So they would have to pay the players. There's no scenario where teams would lend out players that they're paying to fill out that roster?
I do not know the answer to that question, since it's all, he says it's all very fluid. He described it as a roller coaster. As Major League Baseball, and according to him, and the Players Association have gone back and forth with their different plans, he says that how Nashville has fit into each plan has been a part of those discussions. And so it's been a roller coaster of ups and downs as they've waited to kind of find out all the particulars.
And I was reading some of the coverage in The Athletic, apparently, and they mentioned Nashville as one of the lead cities here, but apparently there's some other parks that might try to put something like this together if it meant that, you know, they could pull this off as opposed to having no games at all.
Yeah, and I asked him if he knew of any other minor league teams that were trying to do that. He said he wasn't sure about minor league teams. Now, the independent leagues, which are different than that, he said he thought it's the same thing that you probably read, too, in The Athletic. Maybe some of those could go that route, but he's not sure about any other minor league teams.
Well, I guess we just have to keep our fingers crossed here, and this all, again, is the key is to get to Phase 4. We've made it to Phase 3, and let's hope the news is good as we move forward here. But it'd be fun. And Chris, Darren and I would like to go out and hit fungos and shag flies for this team. It sounds to me like the budget might be tight, so I don't know if we can actually get paid for that. We were thinking to make an extra $400 a week. That's not a bad idea, but it sounds like a lot has to happen there.
It does. Maybe if you paid them $400 a week, you guys could go out there and
maybe. That may be our best shot, and there's still
I would
still
think
there'd
be
air.
Interest in that.
Did Adam tell you the names of the teams? Do we know?
The names of which teams? Oh, that they're going to have here? No. Didn't even get that far. No.
Okay. Well, I was going to say I could get together a mascot outfit. I could try maybe to be a mascot of one of these teams. I don't know.
Yeah, there has to be a uniform design. There's got to be somebody making uniforms. This is big. These are important questions.
You can go down to the local sports store, right, and just snag some uniforms on discount since you're buying in bulk.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, like the local softball team.
Yeah.
Chris, good stuff. Good work on this. It certainly had our attention when Jason Stark put that out there, but you heightened that, I guess, you know, how we felt about it by putting all this information out there that was not out there. So good job by you, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, you know, it's just like news wants what we all want, right? Sports back and things that we can go to. So they're doing their best to try to make that happen. And like you said, you know, it's all kind of contingent upon the city moving into phase four, hopefully over the next month. So keep our fingers crossed.
We will indeed do that. Thanks for coming on.
Sure, guys.
Chris Harris, WSMV, Channel 4 here in town. And it is contingent on them going to Davidson County, going to phase four, which hopefully will indeed happen. We're talking about a timeline of about, well, that would be almost a month from now, right? When they're kind of hopeful that would happen, a little bit shy of a month from now.
Yeah, I think it would line up with the Major League Baseball season.
Yeah, interesting. All right, we will come back and close up shop for hour number three. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Scorpions bringing us back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Special thanks to Chris Harris, WSMV, Channel 4, for joining us, shedding a little bit more light on what we're about to discuss in a little bit more in depth. Don't forget, rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for more information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC reports or updates, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee, which helps support their mission of feeding hungry people, as well as other ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. Speaking of that roster of those two teams that could be playing against each other, you've got a list of free agents, Willie, that are out there and readily available to sign somewhere. And I have no idea where you're going with this, but I have a feeling if you brought this to my attention, there's some intriguing names on there.
Well, there are, and I'm trying to cross-check this because this list was put out as of basically the beginning of spring training. There may be a couple of these guys that have signed since then, but this at least gives you an idea of the caliber of player that might end up coming here. One is Yasiel Puig, who hasn't been signed. Now, he's going to be signed by somebody, right?
Wow.
Because pretty soon the freeze on transactions is going to be lifted, and you're going to start to see maybe some wheeling and dealing. But right now he's unsigned. He's been rumored that the Giants might be interested. There might be a number of teams that will try to jump in. But for whatever reason, nobody has signed him to this point before the roster freeze. I saw Addison Russell was just signed in the Korean League, the KBO, that we've had some fun following. That you know, they're showing some of those games in the early hours of the morning throughout the night on ESPN.
Woke up to it today. Carl Ravish is a staple in the KBO.
It's a lot of guys that you might know from either your favorite team or watching your favorite team play. Guys like Juan Lagares, Jacoby Ellsbury, Austin Jackson, Carlos Gomez, Peter Borju, Rajay Davis, Tim Beckham. Right, and again, a couple of these guys might have signed with somebody. Melky Cabrera. It's a lot of mid-30s guys. Hanley Ramirez, who's, you know, his story is well told. Mark Trumbo, pitchers. Andrew Cashner, Jason Vargas, Clay Buchholz, Clayton Richard. So it's guys that are a little bit tend to be older, that just don't have quite the value, but might be able to help a major league team. Right? It's just there wasn't a great market for them in the offseason.
So those are some of the
names.
So
could you fill two teams? Could you fill two teams with a lot of these guys? Yeah, I think you could. Shelby Miller. Well, actually, he signed a minor league deal with Milwaukee. But, you know, some guys that are maybe trying to restart their career who once were pretty darn good, but then fell on hard times and are trying to get back in.
Shelby Miller. Wow. Once was traded from the Braves to the D-backs for the number one overall pick that they had just drafted, a few months earlier? I don't know. It wasn't very long. He wasn't in Arizona's. Dansby Swanson wasn't in their system very long.
And so I guess, you know, part of the incentive here is you can only bring a certain amount of people into your camp. You can't bring this huge team and play whoever you want in these spring games, I guess. They're limiting the numbers. So there is an opportunity here if they can pull this off. The biggest X factor probably is, can we get to phase four in time to be able to pull this off?
Well, obviously that would...
Because it's about business for the Sounds, right? It's about being able to sell some tickets. Especially if they're going to invest and have to pay the players the $400 a week.
Yeah. I guess another question that we don't have the answer to is, does this open up, you know, a door or doors for this news to start getting out around other places, other minor league ballparks wanting to go down this road?
The Athletic, Ken Rosenthal wrote, what happens if teams run out of players? And he said, such a problem seems unlikely to arise with each club drawing from a 60-man player pool. So each club has 60 players that they're going to have on a list. But it's not out of the question that a team could lose, say, all of its catchers to some combination of injuries and the virus. So with minor leagues dormant, Major League Baseball plans to obtain scouting video and data from independent leagues that plan on operating around the country. The AAA Nashville Sounds are talking about organizing a league for their ballpark. The league would sign players, stage games, sell tickets, the works. Plenty of minor league free agents, some with major league experience, are looking for work. Major League Baseball expects other minor league teams to do something similar to Nashville and allow major league teams to sign their players for a fee, operating the same way independent leagues normally do. So it may not be the only one. The question is, what cities will be able to pull it off? So Nashville, it sounds like, is trying to be on board first and maybe be the place where the best players come. But that's smart, right? Because if you're the 10th team to try to field teams, then you're going to get a lower level of player than if you're the first team and you sign two really good teams.
So I know we hit Chris Harris with a lot of questions that, you know, some he could answer in his conversations with Adam Neuse, and some he just could not. I'll tell you one thing that I'd like to know is this going to be a bubble, Willie? If it's just going to be the same two teams, is this going to be bubble situation? Are they going to be whisked away from First Horizon Park over to whatever hotel? I mean, how is that going to work?
And if you're signed by the Sounds, right, who's responsible if and when somebody tests positive? Like, what kind of staff with that?
Exactly.
Or are you signing a waiver and saying, this is a place to play and that's it? If you get it, you're on your own. You go to the doctor like everybody else. I don't know. That's a great question. Because we're reading about these other sports and how layered and comprehensive their protocols are.
I would have
But these
to
are players
believe...
that are unsigned.
I would just think that don't you think that the Rangers have to have a little, they have to be helping some, right? Like, I can't imagine that the Sounds
it doesn't
are just
sound
on
like
their
it.
Own. No? That they're just completely
no, because they
on
have
their own?
Players. No, they have their players. The Rangers have the players that they have in their organization, and they will not be going to minor league parks to play. Now, what those players are doing, I don't know. Because think about this. They'll have 60 players, right? The Rangers' first 60 players in their organization are going to be available to them.
But where will they
somewhere.
Be?
That's the question. I read there was one team that I think was thinking about using their minor league park to have that team just training there. But who would they play? I don't know. Yeah, would they just play inter-squad games?
They have to be active doing something. Like, they can't just be sitting on a couch waiting for a call-up. I mean, they have to be out there being active doing something. So there has to be a plan with these – with these extra players each team is going to be assigned that they have available to them. They have to be doing something. I mean, are they with the team? Are they not with the team? I mean, how does that work?
Well, they'll be with them throughout the spring training. And then after.
Right, but then what?
You're going to start with. Then you start with 30 players.
Okay, so what about the other 30?
So the other 30, that's a good question. I think at first it would be, well, let's just have them at our minor league facilities. But uh-oh. Arizona and Florida right now are having all kinds of trouble. They've had to shut down a ton of those facilities, right? So I don't know if you can send them down there. So where do you send them?
Well, and we know for sure that they are not allowed to keep them around. So we know for sure they're not allowed to keep them around. So they have to go away. We know that for sure.
No, they have to. They just can't be on the roster. I mean, they can be sitting in the stands, I guess.
They could work out every day with the team, you know? So they have to get some work. So do they do that?
But you can't have 60 guys on the field when you have a game that day. You know, two teams of 60 players, that's not social distancing, number one. And number two, that's just not how you prepare for a game. I don't know. It's a really good question.
Gosh.
They may be figuring out as they go. That's why the Sounds, I think, have been smart to throw their hat in the ring and say, you know, we want to play some games at our park and sell some tickets if we can. Can you help us out?
If you build it.
But that would be
the
perfect scenario, right? It's the 30 guys that aren't playing that for the Rangers, right, against the 30 guys that aren't playing for that, you know, whatever team else wants to send their guys there. But it sounds like that's not in the works. But
yeah,
that's a great question. I'd like to know from Adam Neuse is what are the Rangers planning on doing with their 30 players that aren't on the roster, aren't on the major league roster? Where do those 30 players go and work out? Because you're going to need depth, right? Guys are going to get hurt, et cetera. You're going to have to dip down just like everybody does in a normal year.
But in the tweet, though, it said – that they're planning on signing 40 players with two teams will play against each other. So you need more than 40 players.
It's unsigned players. That's unsigned players. That's the guys we were talking about. The Yasiel Puigs, the Mark Reynolds, Steve Pierce, Lucas Duda, guys that don't have a deal right now. Those would be the type of players that would be available under that scenario.
But how many are
going
to be
on
these
to latch on with somebody
that we're talking about, though? We're talking about 60s at the MLB level. How many? What's the roster size for this group?
As many as you want, I guess. I think they threw 40 out there, but I don't know that there's any limit. You could have as many as you want.
Was that 40 per team?
I doubt it.
Because it can't be 40 for two teams. Any more than that.
Yeah, it would seem like you would need a little bit more than 40 to have a full pitching staff.
You're right. If you want to do things the normal way, I don't know. That's pretty interesting. Hopefully more
to
come.
We got a lot of questions. We got a lot of questions on
this. Don't have very many answers, but we got a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And as you heard in the interview, this was supposed to get released on Monday, but obviously Jason Stark kind of let the cat out of the bag yesterday after our show, or I guess it was last night, and – you know, therefore, now it's out there. At least some more information, not all the information, as we just keep peppering questions that we don't have answers to. We will come back and pepper some questions toward Chris Mason's way to start the fourth and final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.